Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
All right, this week we have somebody, I don't think he's been on my show before, but we have talked a number of, I got to know this man. He's from Garden, Michigan. His name is Tom Rangat. Years ago, I found out that he actually did some fishing in Alaska. Now, he's from Upper Michigan, where I live in Escanaba. He lives in Garden. Actually, I live in Wilson, but he lives probably a little over 50 miles from where I'm at, or less than that. From Escanaba, how far is it?
45 miles.
Okay. So he lives in a real remote area, a beautiful spot on a what's called Big Badenoch. And it's a peninsula. People have to make a living. It's hard because it's a remote area. You make it fishing, maybe selling weed. I bet you there's people that do that, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
And he works very hard. And he's one of those, if you watch Deadliest Catch, he kind of reminds me of that type of person. He works real hard, but he's not afraid to do that. Whatever it takes to feed his family. So, Tom, it's nice of you to join me. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, TJ.
Now, maybe we usually start off when we have a guest, and I just thought it'd be neat to talk to you because you have a lot of neat experiences. But maybe tell me a little bit about yourself. Were you born in Garden?
Yeah, I was born and raised actually in Fairport, right at the end of the peninsula. And then in 1984, I married Lynn White from over by Indian Lake, and we bought a place just 1 mile south of Garden.
So you've lived there most of your life, that area. And you have three boys, right?
Yep, three boys.
And one of them actually goes with you fishing.
Yep, my oldest has been my deckhand a couple years.
See, what Tom does, now before that, you worked at a sawmill, right? You worked, was it a sawmill in the area?
Yeah, Big Bay Wood Products.
Okay. And that's how you kind of made your living. But you had a brother that was in Alaska that does, what, salmon fishing?
Yeah, he's what they call a drifter. Well, they call it a drift fleet. They call us drifters because we're allowed 900 feet of floating gill net, and we float in and out with the tide in Cook Inlet because the tides are the second largest tides in the world. Every 6 hours they change anywhere from 20 to 30 feet in 6 hours.
So you're south of those guys that do the Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, we're just on the other side of the Aleutian Chain.
And so the seas are not as rough.
Actually, some of the Russian fishermen that I know, they actually call Cook Inlet the pond because they say it's a lot nicer than the open ocean.
Right, I would think so. But still, it's pretty rough there. You were telling me when you've been out there.
Yeah, of course, our boats aren't as big as the Deadliest Catch. We're only running 32, 36-footers. And we had one day this year where it was 16, 18-footers with an occasional 20-footer. And you feel awful small.
I bet you do. And you never get sick from that?
No, never.
How many years have you been doing this now?
This was my seventh season, but I did it for 5-6 years in the early 80s. I went up there. My brother's also a fisherman up there, and I was his deckhand for 5 or 6 years.
Now, is this pretty dangerous even in the inland area or the inlet area?
Well, the day that it blew, there was actually three boats that went down, and in the paper, the one boat called the John Henry, the Coast Guard picked the second guy off as the boat overturned. And one boat was coming into the river that day and took a big wave over the stern. And another boat come around in front of him and lashed onto him and drug him into the river, got him in there. But by the time he got him into the river, all that was sticking out was the fly bridge. And so they pulled him up to the high tide line. It happened to be high tide. And then when the tide went out, he was sitting high and dry on the shore. And they pumped her all out and he was working on it, and by Jove, 2 days later, here he is in the next fishing period. Here he is coming down the river in it, and he's going out fishing. Mm. I told my brother I'd be a little bit leery after it's been sitting on the bottom.
So nobody drowned in any
of those? No, the third boat was called the Gizmo, and it had father and his daughter was his deckhand, and they were missing. They didn't know what happened to him, and they had went in behind Callaghan Island, which is an island in Cook Inlet, and they of course, couldn't get no radio reception once they got tucked in behind the cliffs, and they spent the night there, and then the next day when the weather calmed down, they come back across, so nobody, no lives were lost anyway.
So it still can be fairly dangerous.
Oh, definitely.
Do you worry about that when you're out there?
I don't know if I'm worried so much as more cautious to make sure that everything, you pay attention more to your motor, you look in your lazarette in the back to make sure there's no water in there, and you just try to keep an eye on things a lot more when it's rough like that.
Mm. Yeah, that's got to be, you know, a lot of people, most people probably don't make their living where they have to, I don't have to worry with my job, you know. There's not many dangerous things. Maybe on the way to work is about it. But it's just, I find it interesting, you know, people used to do this. This used to be a way of life for most everybody before the turn of the 20th century. Life was a lot rougher, and there still are people that live like that. And you just take it for granted, don't you? I mean, yeah, not for granted, but you just take it as in stride.
Right. I just look at it as a job, you know. I mean, it's something I really enjoy doing. It's probably the neatest fishery I've ever seen, because you actually get to see the salmon hit the net and see it all happen before your eyes.
And there's something about the fresh salmon, too, isn't it? And when you catch fresh fish. Now, Tom also has another business he started, and it's called the Fish Shack. And he uses fresh whitefish right out of Lake Michigan. And I like fish, but I've never really had much in the way of whitefish, and I thought this was really good. But that's really fresh fish right out of the lake too, right?
Yes, that's all caught by the local fishermen, Peterson's Fishery and Hermes Fishery and Jensen's Fishery in Manistique. They're excellent in supplying me the fresh whitefish.
It's funny because you go to the fair. We had the UP State Fair just this past week, and you got all kinds of stuff that's probably not so good for you, but, you know, the Croatian chicken and all the other things that are out there. And I saw the Fish Shack, and I'm thinking, boy, I sure hope Tom does well with that. You wouldn't think, unless it's really bad for you, Tom, you know, people are going to be lining up. But people went crazy over that, didn't they?
Yeah, they're excellent. I don't know how many people I had tell me that probably the only thing at the fair that was actually good for you. I mean, it's still deep fried, so, I mean, but you still fish, got that. But, yeah, at least you're eating the fish. And I guess the thing they're looking for that supposedly keeps you healthy in the fish is all the omega-3.
Right, the omega-3s. And they say salmon is one of the best ones you can have, right?
Yes, and that's the sockeye salmon.
That's the stuff you catch up in Alaska.
Exactly.
I just wanted to get that out there so we know a little bit about Tom. I've got to know him. I think he's an awesome guy. Him and his family, I got to meet him. He's a down-to-earth man, which is something I endorse. I like that, those kind of people. I feel comfortable around those people. But you were telling me, this is, you know, life is about, I don't know, so many things. You were telling me a story about a coincidence. This is more than a coincidence. When you were up in Alaska, you got to know some people. And then, if you don't mind telling that story again, tell
me. I was up there. I got laid off a couple years ago. So my nephew is a carpenter up there. He had a great big job and invited me to come up there.
Now, what city is that in?
This is in Kenai, Alaska.
Okay. How far is that from, like?
Anchorage. You fly into Anchorage. It's 180 miles south of Anchorage on the Kenai Peninsula, they call it.
Okay.
And I would go over every night, usually to a friend's house that I've known for 20 years. I met him in the early 80s when I was up there. And he has a son that's 17, and of course the son, he has friends over. And one of his friends had a girlfriend, and so I got to know her a little bit and had talked to her sometimes. And my deckhand this year was actually Scott, the guy I'd known for 20 years, about my age. And he come to the boat one day when we were leaving the river, and he says, "Oh, Tom, by the way, I got a story for you." He says, "Do you remember Corinne, the girlfriend of Josh?" And I says, "Yes." And he says, "She told me that her and her family were moving from Alaska." And he said, I asked her where they were moving to, and she said, Michigan. And she said, or he said, we're at Michigan. And she said, some little town in the UP called Garden. And he says, oh, my God. He says, remember Tom, who was here last year doing carpenter work? She says, yeah, I remember. She says, that's where he's from, is Garden. Isn't and that- so sure enough, if they don't show up Saturday night at the UP State Fair, and I look out the concession window, and there they are.
There
her,
they are.
Her and her mom and dad standing there. And,
no kidding.
Yeah.
Is it what? I mean, you know, I just don't think everything happens for a reason. Do you believe that at all, Tom?
Oh, I do.
And I mean, this doesn't mean like it's going to be something greater, but who knows? Maybe you guys become friends, and maybe they help you, or you help them. And I just think it's all part of a bigger connection. And when things like that happen, I really think they're a wake up call and a good one. It's like, okay, this is really cool when something like that happens. A coincidence, if you want to call it. Or maybe it's part of a greater design. Maybe, now the family, you know the parents. You said you know the parents fairly well?
Yes, the parents lived here maybe 15, 20 years ago, and I had met them once upon a time, and then they had moved to Alaska, and then had, because the girl is like 17, so she was born and raised in Alaska, and actually when they came up to the fish house at the fair, once I recognized her, I looked at her mother and father, and I said, well, Richard Bird, I says, here, I never even knew this was your daughter all the time that I had seen her up
Isn't
in Alaska.
That something?
Here, this was her, and I had known him 15, 20 years ago when he was here before.
That's interesting. I think it's interesting. And those of you that are listening to this probably don't know anything about Garden. It isn't much. There isn't much.
Don't
there.
Blink.
How many people live in the Garden area, would you say?
I think there's about 300 that actually live in the town of Garden. I don't know what really lives on the whole peninsula, but like in Fairport, they say there used to be 100. I don't know if there's 100 anymore, but I noticed when I went down there, though, the salmon fishing must be really good because the population has exploded down there because the salmon fishermen, the sports fishermen are sure having a ball. They're catching lots of salmon. Mm.
It's just, you know, if you can find a way to live, and I'm sure some people go up there to retire because it's a beautiful spot right on Lake Michigan. It's a great place, but otherwise you're trying to eke out a living. It's probably a tough place to go, make a go of it, right?
Yeah, it's tough. If you work, you usually got to travel an hour or two to. I know a lot of guys that are iron workers and stuff, and they travel back and forth to Marquette to the iron mines and stuff like that. And if you want to live down there, it.
What is it you like about living in that area?
I don't know. I guess I was born and raised, and our family is real tight, and it's. I guess nice being around the family, and my dad was a truck driver when I was young, and I've been in every state except Hawaii now, and I still have never found a spot
that you liked any better.
Yeah.
Are you drawn to the water? Is there something magical about it?
Well, I was born down in Fairport and was always a fisherman, worked on the gillnet tugs and trap net boats from when I was old enough when they first started letting me get on there and going with them. And so I've had something to do with fishing pretty near all
my
life.
Do you feel like there's any kind of, I don't know, this might sound like a weird question, like a spiritual connection when you're out there at sea and you're away from everything else? Do you feel
yes, I do, actually. It's this year, actually, we, in the beginning of the season, We were having a pretty good day out there, and one of the gentlemen in our group that we talked to on the radios, he had trouble, and he was broke down, and this was about noon or 1 o'clock, and the fishing period don't end till 7, and the tide was going out real hard, and we're already 45 miles away from the harbor, and as much as I didn't want to, because I knew it was going to cost me money, you can't leave them there. So I went and hooked on to them, and I would drag them north against the tide. And, of course, I can't run very fast now.
Right.
And then I'd let go of them, and I'd set my net out, and I'd watch him as he drifted away from me. And then I'd after a while, I'd pick my net and get my salmon out of it, and I'd go and grab them again and head north some more to try to stay up with the fish as they're headed north. And finally, then, as of when the period was over, it took twice as long, of course, to get back to the dock because you're only running half the speed and towing them in. But my wife, who is a strict Catholic, she said that it'll come back to me tenfold. And for some reason, it seemed like after that, no matter where I went or what I did, the next few fishing periods, no matter where I went or set my net, there was fish everywhere.
Isn't that something? You said you had an incredible year this year when it wasn't expected to happen.
Yeah, they were only expecting 1.3 million fish to be caught by the Cook Inlet fishermen. And Bristol Bay, which is where they filmed the deadliest catch and has the largest salmon run in the world, they were predicting them to catch 20 or 40 million fish. They only caught 20 million fish, so our price skyrocketed. And the Cook Inlet run ended up being real big, 5.2 million fish, and only half the fleet was fishing because it was predicted to be such a bad year. And it was just the best season I've ever had.
Coincidence? Maybe not. Tom Rangette, he's from Garden, Michigan. We'll talk to him some more in just a moment.
Out there.
Couple of things to take away from Tom, my guest this week. Yeah, just my own observation, and I've only been around him a few times, and I've met his entire family pretty much recently. I thought they were all real hard workers, and even having teenage sons, they all pitched in, all three of them, and his wife was there, and they all seemed happy just because they knew it was an opportunity to make some money. And they didn't mind. They had to work long hours all week long. And if you look at Tom, you could tell he's a hard worker because he's physically fit. I mean, really, really, really physically fit. And I don't know if he lifts weight or not, but he's a lot better shape than I am. And I don't think I'm in that bad of shape. But what I did take away is that this is like a family, kind of a throwback to me in my mindset. And I don't know if they feel this way. And it's not an insult by any means of how we used to be. And how we may have to become again. If things get bad again, and I'm not talking 2012, but you know what goes around comes back around again. History repeats itself. If things get bad again, we're all going to have to fend for ourselves. We're not going to be lazy. You can't. Nobody can be lazy. And everybody's going to have to learn how to survive. And Tom's already there. He's already there with his family. And they all have the right attitude. I guess that's what I'm talking about. It's just like a pioneering spirit attitude. What used to be at one time, which I'm glad to see, that there are people still have that attitude. So easy nowadays to have people do things for us. Or, you know, we shop somewhere, or we buy our food somewhere, or we go through a fast food, or we have jobs that keep us removed from the physical end of it. And there are those, like Tom, that work very hard, and I guess I just have the greatest respect for that. And I got a feeling we might go back to that. Also coming up, R.A. Ricky, he's going to be my guest next week. He wrote a book called UP. At first I thought it was a book about youpers, which youpers is not a bad term. I don't want anybody to think that in a bad way. People from Upper Michigan, I see youpers as a lot of good. You know, it's a combination of several things. But this book really is about kind of the dark side. It's a fictional book, but it examines, I think, some things within Ron Ricky's life, R.A. Ricky. He went through some things, and they're coming to surface on this book. Bullying, getting beat up, having a negative life around him with his friends and so forth. So we tend to cover a lot of that up in small communities, those of you listening from outside the area. We want small people to think small communities are perfect, and they're far from that. And while we know it goes on in the cities, it goes on everywhere. So maybe, you know, this book might open some eyes. And that's the best thing that could come out of it, right? Also, down the road, I will talk soon to a fellow that's been on the show before, Little Fox. He happened to be in Good Heart, Michigan, so we'll have him on again, and I'm looking forward to that, see what he has to say about his journeys around the world. And soon, coming real soon, will be another guest who I haven't talked to in quite a while, and I'm looking forward to talking to her as well. And she's from Wisconsin, and she wrote about the man wolf, and I expect to have her on real soon, within a few weeks here. Linda Godfrey was just in Upper Michigan this past weekend at an event at the Sioux. I didn't go to it, but I still am going to talk to her, and we're going to get her on, and we'll see what she's talking about in her new book. Anyway, thanks for listening, and if you have a comment or a question, I hope you get a hold of us. You can put something in the shout box, or you can just leave a comment, and I'll see it. And feel free to contact us. And if you want to be a guest, we can do that too. Thanks for listening.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
My name is TJ Ryan. You're listening to Out There. And normally the show is about bizarre, strange things. But this week my guest is Tom Rangette. He's from Garden, Michigan. I've known Tom for, how long has it been now?
Oh, probably three, four years now.
At least, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he just strikes me as a good spirit. And not that all people aren't, you know, but he's just down to earth type of person. I think with what I can tell, what you see of Tom is what you get. And he's a good-natured guy. That's what I like about him, too. He's always got a smile on his face, too. So that's cool. So we kind of became friends a few years ago when I interviewed him on a different talk show on our AM station. And he gives me salmon that's really good when he catches it when he goes up to Alaska. He'll always bring me a jar. And he's always doing stuff for people. So I thought, well, I got to do something to help him out, get the word out a little bit. So that's why we're doing the show. So whenever you see, the name of it is The Fish Shack. Now, most of you listening to this probably won't see it unless he travels the world. You know, I got people in China that might be listening to this. So if you ever get to China, Tom, set up, look for the Fish Shack. It's really good. So we talked about, I told you about my site and how I've had people on talking about natural products. And you kind of agreed that, you know, you've seen some of these things. Now, weren't you, you were telling me about a guy, there was a doctor in Garden years ago that had this salve.
Yeah, the Mary Grove Retreat Center in Garden actually used to be a hospital at once upon a time, and his name was Dr. Lamutt. My mother actually worked for him when she was real young.
So this had to go back a long time ago, right?
Yeah, exactly, because actually, like I said, my mom was 46 when she had me, so that made her... She was born in like 1915, my mother was.
So we're probably talking 1930-something, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
She worked for this man?
And he had a salve, and she's seen countless times where someone would have like a skin cancer or something, and he would keep applying this salve that he made of natural stuff, and she said it would draw it right out the skin, and she said it, the cancer would actually look like a spider with a hard center with... like legs growing off it.
And so these people would be cured eventually?
Yep. A lot of them that took... She remembered one that had it bad on his lip and drew it right out. And within 6 months or so, they had gotten it all.
And you don't know what it was made from? It wasn't made from like...
When he passed away, she said that it passed with him because he had never told anybody how he had done it or what it was made of.
Well, you think he would have.
I know. I think you think he would have had it somewhere on a ledger or something, or somewhere for
you know. And the thing is, I've discussed this before on the show, is that there was a time when we didn't have a lot of these drugs and things, and so how did people heal themselves? And the story you tell is very similar. There's a woman we go and see a couple times a year. She's in her 80s, but she's just got such a spirit about her. And I actually stayed with her when I went to broadcasting school, and so she's like a second mom. And so. She was telling me when she was a child near Wausau, Wisconsin, when people got sick with cancer, this Native American would come around, and he had some kind of, I think it was taken from trees, some kind of something that was a natural herb or something, but you would pay for it, and you would actually rub this on the cancer, and the cancer would go away. So I guess the whole point of this, I'm talking to Tom about this, I'm telling you about a woman I knew, is that there was a cure back in the 30s, and who knows before then? Where did this cure go? And now, you know, you have to get, I guess you can get cured if you catch it soon enough, but there was a simple treatment, and it didn't have side effects. You didn't lose your hair. And so where is all the, where do you think these things have gone?
I don't know. I think, like you say, when you watch TV, they all the drug companies, they're, it's going to cure what you have, but it's going to give you a half a dozen other things that you don't have. So which one, you know, you don't know where to. And like my wife, like I was telling you before, my wife was reading the Bible one night, and a passage in the Bible said that the Lord has put everything on this earth that you need to keep you healthy.
And you believe that?
I do.
And she believes that, right?
Very
so
much.
When your family gets sick, what do you do?
I don't know. We don't, knock on wood, we haven't been sick in a long time.
You don't get sick very often. And why do you think that is?
I don't know.
You know, I hear people in town here, they're always running to the doctor, always running emergency room. You live on the country, you can't do that.
Right. And
so what's the difference?
And I've never, you know, we've always, a lot of people, you know, have good jobs and have health insurance and stuff like that. So everything, every little thing that ails them,
right,
they're off to the doctor, where I don't have that pleasure. So
you don't even have,
you
got to
come up with the health remedy to take care of it.
And that almost, you know, and I'm not trying to, I don't want to run down the health organization or what hospitals are trying to do, but to me the whole health thing is a scare to get us to spend more money and become dependent on a lot of it is. And so I mean, while hospitals do amazing things and surgery, there's amazing things they can do now they could never do before.
Exactly.
And they really can help you sometimes if you're sick. This is not, I'm not trying to put that down, but it seems like it's almost to the point where we've become dependent, and we need to be independent, I believe, like the attitude you have. And I guess what I was getting at, Tom, is I was saying, do you feel like your attitude has a lot to do with it?
Oh, I think so, because I know when the kids, a lot of times in the wintertime, or when school starts and that, of course, seems like the kids start coming home with colds,
right,
and stuff,
right,
like that. And my wife will always say, don't be kissing on them. Now you're going to end up getting sick. You're going to catch what they got. And I just tell her, I don't get sick. I got too many things to do, and knock on wood, like I said, I don't even remember the last time I had a cold.
Isn't that something? So you think your attitude has a lot to do with that, obviously.
Definitely.
Because you say, I'm not going to, I don't have time for it.
Right, like this is like you're fishing in Alaska, you know, you ain't got time to get seasick, you know.
Right.
You don't have time, so.
Well, I remember seeing The Deepest Catch. On The Deepest Catch, they said, I thought this was really cool. I mean, you got to look for, I think there's things in life that are deeper meaning, and you got to look for them. And once in a while, you'll see them. And I think a lot of times connected to nature, you'll learn things there, too. That's where I think we kind of get in touch with who we really are. That's what I like about, you know, living where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but on The Deepest Catch one time, they were talking about these, the greenhorn, or what do they call them, right?
The first-time fisherman.
And they said, oh, they're sick as a dog. They're sick as a dog. And they made a statement. They said, everybody gets sick out here on The Deadliest Catch. You just have to get to the point where you convince yourself that you're no longer going to be that way.
Right. When I was young, on the gillnet tugs, you're enclosed in Fairport. And, of course, when I was young, you're out partying and having a good time.
Right.
And so when I get home, sometimes it wouldn't be till wee hours, and I'd be just in time to catch the boat.
Right.
And I'd have to jump on the boat and head out there, and you're enclosed in the gillnet tug and the smell of the diesel and stuff like that. And I have been actually sick once or twice, but mostly I think from hooping it up the night before, you know. So but you stand right there at the lifter table, and they have a pail there for you, and you just, when it's time to
do what
throw
you
up,
gotta,
yeah,
do.
You throw up, and then you, but you just stand right there and keep right on picking. And
you know, it's something to be said for doing what you have to do. And I think we all find a way to, you know, and the more we become dependent on others, we lose our own independence, the way I look at it. So I guess maybe that's what I really like about you, Tom. You're very independent. You and you're a good guy. I mean, other than that, but I mean also that you're very, you do what you have to do. I just respect that. I think that's awesome. We don't have much of that anymore today, it seems like, especially in the lower 48, maybe. Maybe up in Alaska, it's that way all the way, right? It's that way a lot, huh? You run into those type of people.
Oh, definitely. I know a few of the, because there's quite a few Russians that fish up there that either their parents have defected from Russia. And actually, I know this one Russian. His name is Jim Melkomukov.
Oh, yeah.
And the name of his boat is called the Melko because no one could ever pronounce his name.
Last name, huh?
And so when he would go in to get fishing supplies, they would all just write down Melko. So he thought that would be a real neat name for his boat. And they are some of the best people. They're all fishermen, them Russians, and they're great fishermen. And my brother, you're always heard, oh, the Russians this and the Russians that. And I met this Jim, and he is probably the nicest man I have ever met up there, because there's not a doubt in my mind that he could be going into the river and getting ready to tie up to his buoy, and I could be 50 miles away and call him on the radio and say, Jim, I've got troubles. And he wouldn't even tie to his buoy. He would turn around and had 3-4 hours, because they only run about 10, 12 miles an hour. So he would head all the way back. I know he would in a heartbeat and grab onto me and bring me back.
That's just amazing. And you know, the thing is too, like you say, borders separate people, and so do the politicians and the governments. And the people, I would think, are the same all over the world.
Oh, definitely.
Especially if they're good spirits. You know, there are some bad folks no matter where you go. And there's some people with no standards in life, that don't respect life, that take from others, that destroy life. But there are those with good hearts, and I think it's, and especially the people, I think, that are working a hard, honest job, they tend to be the best spirits out there. That's just my impression. I mean, there's great people everywhere, but you work hard for a living, you're generally a pretty honest, down-to-earth person.
Right? Yeah, because some of the Russians up there, there is people that look down on them because they're, you know, they say they're from Russia and, right, you know, and they actually live in their own community. They have their own community. Mm-hmm. They have their own school, their own churches and stuff like that. And so there's some people that do look down on them. But ever since I've met Jim, it's unbelievable, like I said. And the thing is Jim, even with the Russian accent, his dad was the one that defected from Russia and got into China, and then the Salvation Army actually got his father and mother over to Brazil.
Boy, they must have some stories to tell.
Oh, man. And so he was actually born in New Jersey, then they moved to Portland, and then they moved to Alaska and became fishermen. So he's as much American as me and you.
Absolutely. You know, you started to tell me something before we're going to do this interview. I don't know if it was a ghost story or something weird you were going to tell me. Remember we were talking about that? I said, save it.
Well, that was where I told the person in, and my wife told me that. Because even Jim, the Russian up there, he tells me that he kind of catches, because Russians are very religious. Mm. And he goes, sometimes he doesn't go to church. And they also, if you're married, you have to never shave your beard.
Really?
Your beard has to never be shaved once you're married. The women wear a bonnet. If you're married, you wear a bonnet. But if you don't have a bonnet on, then you know that she's not married. Mm. And he says when he does go to church, he kind of catches a lot of static from some of the others and telling them, why aren't you at church and why aren't you praying? And he says, believe me, when I'm in 30 footers out there, says I pray like heck.
It makes you spiritual in a hurry, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Do you ever feel like, I mean, I'm sure you've been in that position before where you're a little concerned. Do you pray out there?
You definitely look for a little guidance.
Do you ever feel like you're getting it? Do you ever get like a sign or anything like that?
I don't know if it's so much of a sign as just every time I get done picking my net or making a run and it's really rough like that, I'll look to the heavens and and give a thank. Yeah, just give a thanks. And
That's awesome. Because that's one of the, you know, that's one of the thing that you hear this. There's this formula of how to achieve things in life, and one is to be appreciative, to enjoy what you're doing, and to be thankful when you do receive something. Because that seems, people have said this before, and you can read it in books, and you can experience it in life, and I've learned that through my own experience. You get more when you're thankful, when your heart is open. And so that's cool. I'm glad to hear that that's the way you feel about it.
Exactly.
Hopefully your fishing continues to be better and better, and great success. So thanks a lot for coming in, Tom. We're just about out of time. Tom Ranget, he's from Garden, Michigan, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from where I'm at today. And we both, we're right next to Lake Michigan in Upper Michigan. It's a beautiful area. Lake Upper Michigan, to me, you know, I've been across a lot of across the country, and there's probably a couple other places I could see living, but there's something neat about living near the Great Lakes like this. It's just incredible, don't you think? It's just...
Yeah,
the energy of the lakes. I'm sure it's just like being on the ocean.
You know? I've had people come from Alaska, and when you tell them you live on the Great Lakes, they think, you know. And when they get here and see the size of these lakes, they're impressed.
Yeah. And do you? I mean, you've been out. You've been far out on the Great Lakes, right?
Oh yeah, I've been. The gillnet tugs out of Fairport. We go right out into the middle of Lake Michigan.
And do you just, like I say, you get some kind of feeling being that away from land completely. There's no feeling, you can't describe it.
It is because the day it blew real hard in Alaska, when it's calm out, it seems like, because there's 540 boats fishing Cook Inlet, and it seems like there's boats everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's boats. And the day it blew, you look around and you look, you're the only soul out there. You don't see another boat nowhere.
In a way, it's lonely, but in a way, it's rewarding, I'm sure. So, thank you very much for talking to me, Tom.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the salmon.
You're welcome for that, too.
You're awesome, man. Thanks.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.
Look up the trailer and get me to the site. Now I can turn, I can go all over.
Okay, cool. Well, this will probably be up in 2 or 3 weeks. We'll have that up there. Cool. Once a week, I put a new show up. It's a half-hour show. So it's nothing spectacular, but it gets a lot of hits, and I get some comments, and I get some people that are on my show that have been on, like, national shows from time to time. But I like just regular folks, because that's the people that are going to tell you the stories, you know? From their heart, you know, and not like some of these shows that are out there, radio shows, they hype it up, you know, these national shows, because they want to make it scary or whatever. I don't do that, because I just want it to be a regular thing. But some of the stuff we talk about is a little freaky, so it's, I don't have to, you know? And if it's not, I don't care. It's not like, oh, I got Tom on this week, we don't have anything scary. I don't care. People are still going to probably find it interesting, and if they don't, I don't care.
Right.
So I put this on the end of my show just so you know that this is the way we talk, even when we're not on the microphone. I don't hype it up, and I won't, because I think that's misleading. And I'm sure there's some podcasts that do that, and I definitely know there are radio shows that do that. I used to buy into that. I don't anymore.